Blog Talk Radio.
The familiar music that brightens up your Tuesday nights between 9 and 10 o'clock. I'm here with a live show for the next 59 minutes, and I'm hoping that you'll join me and we can talk about American politics, American culture, talk about just about anything that you want to talk about. We're in the middle of an election season, and things are going well for the Democrats right now and not so well for the Republicans. I'd like to tell you that that breaks my heart, but it doesn't. Yes, I guess I am a partisan Democrat, but I'm willing to entertain ideas. A lot going on. Number one, it's my birthday week. It looks like I'm going to get to Social Security age before the Social Security Trust Fund runs out. And that makes me feel kind of good, although I'm not taking my Social Security yet, because I am at least as good as I was 4 years ago, because I have a job again. I'm working, not making near the amount of money I made before, but I really don't care about that. The fact is, I'm working. I'm doing something productive. I'm not on unemployment any longer. Hopefully I can make the unemployment numbers tick up a little bit. I'm not someone who's given up looking for a job, though it took me a whole lot longer to find that job this time than I anticipated. I'm in a kind of a place that's trying things that haven't really been tried before in school. We got a new paradigm, and I think it's a working one. There's still a lot of backsliding to the way school used to be, but I think we're going to get over that hump. Just like we're going to get over the Bush hump. I'll tell you, folks, why don't you give me a call, 347-945-6713, and we could have a conversation about what is going on in this world. It's a really odd world. But anyway, I'd like to talk about new paradigms. I'm getting a new karma, though. I'm telling you that. I'm getting much less excited by what's going on in the world. Hey, you know, actually, something's going to happen tomorrow night. Talk about backsliding. When I was a young kid, I would bleed for Dodger Blue. Oh, and when they left Brooklyn and went out to the West Coast in 1957, I was 1 7-year-old kid who was it brought tears to my eyes. Of course, by the time I was 9, they were in the World Series and against the White Sox, and they won it that year, too, if my memory serves me right. if someone's got the details on that, I don't have enough time to go look and see if, you know, on Google whether or not, yeah, the Dodgers won in 59. I'm almost positive. Let me go and look. You know, this Google stuff is really pretty cool. And I try to have two computers going, but I don't today. 1959 World Series. Yes, the 1959 World Series featured the National League champion Los Angeles Dodgers beating the American League champion Chicago White Sox 4-2, if my memory serves me right. Let me go look. Four games to two, yep. It was the first pennant for the White Sox in 40 years. Even though they didn't win in 59, the White Sox would win in 2005. Was the first championship the Dodgers won in Los Angeles, though they did win in 54 while they were in Brooklyn. They lost in 55, but that was the one where Don Larson, I think it was 55 when he threw the perfect game. The interesting thing was it was the first time a West Coast team won the world championship. And it was the first time ever. This is an interesting statistic. It was that 59 World Series. It was the first time no pitcher for either team pitched a complete game. That's pretty cool. This is an amazing statistic. It was the first time since 1948 that no World Series games were played in New York. That's pretty amazing. From 1948 to 1958, there was at least one World Series game played in New York in that whole time. Wow. Anyway, games 3, 4, and 5. The first World Series games played on the West Coast. The only games ever played in Memorial Coliseum. And the only World Series game in history to exceed 90,000 in attendance. Game 5 drew 92,706 fans. And according to Wikipedia, it's not likely to be ever broken since there's no major league stadium these days with a capacity of 70,000. Larry Sherry won the World Series Most Valuable Player Award, and he followed Johnny Padres in 55, Don Larson in 56, Lou Burdett in 57, Bob Tully in 58. It's interesting, all four games the Dodgers won, Don Sherry finished winning two and saving two. Oh, boy. Ted Kaczynski drove in 10 runs, even though it was in a losing cause. And he was the first player to ever have double-digit RBI totals for a World Series. This is interesting. The 1957 Milwaukee Braves. Where did they resettle from? That's interesting. This World Series also was the most recent World Series to host the final World Series games of its host venues. Okay, the original Yankee Stadium closed after the 2003 series, replacing the Coliseum, adding itself to the Coliseum. But yes, the Dodgers moved out of the Coliseum. I don't know if it was in 60, but they eventually, maybe it was 60, by 63, they had moved to Chavez Ravine and Dodger Stadium, where they play to this day. Well, the whole reason this whole rant started when the Washington Nationals got their franchise and it went in the National League, I always thought, holy cow, maybe I could realize that childhood dream and watch the Dodgers play. Oh, would that have been, that would have been a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing. Well, believe it or not, the Dodgers are here in Washington for a huge three-game set with the Washington Nationals. The Dodgers are fighting for a playoff spot, and they really need to win these three games very badly. And that could send the Nationals into a real panic because their lead is now down to 5 games over the Atlanta Braves. And so if the Dodgers don't win these three games, they probably are likely not to make the playoffs at all, let alone win the National League West. But with a big performance, they could very well just do that. And that would be very interesting. you know, it's interesting. Everyone knows that the Milwaukee Braves moved to Atlanta and became the Atlanta Braves. The big question where did the Milwaukee Braves moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin from? And if anybody knows that, why don't you give me a call at 347-945-6713. Where did the 1957 Milwaukee Braves come from? And we're not, where did they come from to go to Milwaukee? And I'd love to hear from you on the call-in numbers, or if Gas 8758 knows the answer, but that's the big question on Norman Night tonight. From what city did the Milwaukee Braves move to Milwaukee from in 1957 when they became the first team to win the World Series from a relocated city. But anyway, the Dodgers, they were rained out tonight in the Capitol and are playing a doubleheader tomorrow. Wouldn't that be a thrill to go see? I don't know if I can or I can't. It would be a real treat for my birthday, or maybe go to the game on Thursday, the 20th, which is my birthday. That would be a pretty cool thing to do also. But on Thursday, I really do want to go see Big Boy Little at the Blues Jam at the Zoo Bar on Connecticut Avenue here in Washington, D.C., or in a little town outside of Washington, D.C., but go into National Stadium and see the Dodgers play. Of course, that would also violate the way National Stadium got built and the way the major league owners just got the money to build the stadium and drove all the people out of Washington. They're now cramming the close-in suburbs here in Prince George's County and just overtaxing the capacity of the PG police force to almost to keep order. They can keep order, but they can't really do much more than that. And that's really a shame. But give me a call, 347-945-6713, or call into the chat room. Okay, some news, things we could talk about. I'm going to save the Romney tape for a while. Some good news today. The teacher strike in Chicago is over. They settled. They're going back to class tomorrow. I hope everybody is not just pounding the teachers' union for going on strike. I know my buddy, and I do listen to him every morning, but my buddy, Joe Scarborough, just pummeled the teachers' union, and I don't think he really knows anything about what those teachers were fighting about or fighting for. To be honest, substandard positions of the Chicago schools. The big issues were, how do teachers get evaluated? And what kind of job security should teachers have? Well, what do you think about it? How should we evaluate teachers? Give me a call, 347-945-6713. I think the first thing we should evaluate teachers on is, do they know anything? Do they know something? Do they know something that they can communicate to the students? You know, I mean, that just goes, you know, by the wayside. And I don't think anybody really thinks about it. Do history teachers really know history? Do they know something about the history they teach? Not something they find in some curriculum standard or something, you know, they find in some state standard, but do they know anything about the history? Not just about the standard American history or the or European history. Do they know anything about the history of the kids who are across the desk from them? Do they have any sense of how those kids got there or what those kids go through to get there. So that's the first thing, in Norm's opinion, you should evaluate teachers on. And what I'd want you to evaluate me on, do I know anything? The second thing I would like you to evaluate me on, if you were coming to evaluate me, is do I love my subject? Not just do I know anything about it, but am I in love with it? Anyone who knows me knows I love history. And I love the math that I teach. You know, it's like I often tell people, history is my passion and math has been my hobby. But yes, when you evaluate me, of course, if I'm in a math class, do I know any math? And I don't think it takes long to find that out. And do I love math? Do I love what I'm doing, what I'm trying to communicate? And do I want my students to be successful? Lots of teachers don't want their students to be successful. But anyway, the next thing I want you to evaluate me on, and I know this sounds goofy, but do I show up? 90% of any job is showing up every day. If you show up every day, stuff happens. And when you don't show up every day, students particularly, disadvantaged students often feel deserted and abandoned again. Many students' lives have been a series of being let down, of letdowns and abandonments. And so do I know anything about what I'm supposed to be teaching? Do I love what I'm supposed to be teaching? And do I show up every day? Is it important to me to be in that school? And most of those things you can tell by simply observing me in the classroom. You'll know if I know anything by listening to me. You'll know if I love what I'm doing and what I'm teaching just by watching and listening to me. All of those things are important. Now, what kind of job security should a teacher have? I don't think I should have to be worrying about losing my job. Unless I don't know anything, I don't love what I do. And I don't show up every day. Yes, people can get sick. And it happens. I've been lucky. In my 30 years, I don't think I'd missed 2 days in a row twice. In fact, once I got the flu. It kept me out for 3 days. I do remember that. Hell, I had 12 teeth pulled out. I was at work that afternoon. No, I'm not a hero. It's what I do. My father used to tell me, the only time you're what I said to my father once, I said, you worked at the plant for 40 years. You took 3 days. How come you didn't take more sick days? You got 30 a year. And he looked at me and he said, with this incredulous look on his face, I wasn't sick. He liked what he does. And when you like what you do, you go to work. And he knew about what he did. And it's the same with teaching school. If you know about it, if you love it, and if you go every day, you need to be, or you need to feel safe in what you do. Come on, somebody, you've been all listening to me out. Why doesn't somebody give me a call? 347-945-6713. That's the number. Tell me I'm full of poop if you want. I don't care. We'll go round and round about it. But a teacher needs job security. Shouldn't have to worry about the job disappearing because the kids don't disappear. Some administrator shouldn't have pencil control, what we used to call a pencil control. You don't have any kind of security to your job if all you are is a pencil eraser away from not doing it anymore. And teachers don't make a lot of money, I don't believe. Yeah, I know. The average pay of the Chicago area teachers was $76,000 a year. Well, there were a hell of a lot of those teachers making a hell of a lot less than $76,000. Because there's a bunch of administrators making more than that. And you get averages, it wasn't median, it was average. And if you come to my class sometime, I'll explain the difference to you between a median pay and an average pay. The simple answer being the median, there are as many above as below. I'm willing to bet there are a lot more salaries below 76,000 than there were above it. And without job security, well, it's really hard to teach school, damn it. I mean, it really is hard. And if you've got to constantly be worrying about keeping your job, then you become more concerned with being pleasing to your administrator than to your students. Your students are your customers, and you owe them. You walk into my history classroom, I owe it to you to make it as interesting as I can. I owe it to you to try to make it as exciting for you as my history teachers made it for me, which is why I loved it. I remember my history teachers from high school. Sylvester Kuligowski, Mr. Steen, and Tex McPherson. I had him for 2 years. Those are my history teachers, all smart, intelligent men who cared about all the boys in that classroom. And it was good stuff. And lots of things that happened later in my life. Hey, I got a call coming in. Hold on. Okay, 916, we got you on with Norm.
How you doing, guy?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry I've been on a rant here for a half hour.
I heard a portion of it.
That's first time. That's only the first thing on my list.
So you're saying you need job security, huh?
Yes, everybody does.
Well, yeah, okay, I'm glad you said that.
But it is especially hard to be a school teacher and have to worry about keeping your job.
Well, you know, it's, I don't know. At any time are you suggesting that teachers should have something more than any other worker has in terms of job security or tenure, evaluations?
Evaluation, and I don't know if you heard, and I mean, I was all on the Chicago teacher's side. They strike about evaluation and job security. That strike was about. And anyway, I'm trying to, my 3 points, how I should be evaluated.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair. The first thing, do I know something? That is so often forgotten. Does the teacher, I'm going to say I, do I know something about history? Do I know something about math? Because that's what I'm there to teach. Not about how to teach and how to control classes and all that other gobbledygook that they spend most of their time in ed school teaching you. The second thing is, do I love what I know? Do I love my subject? Is it important to me?
Okay.
And is it important to me to convey it to other people? And you can, it's not hard to tell that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm just going to throw this out for you. Let's say, I'm on the school board.
Wait a minute. Let me just say the third thing before we go at these first two. The third thing is, do I show up? 90% of any job is simply showing up.
I didn't hear you, but I think you're saying just show up.
Correct.
Anyway, here's the thing. now, do you think that a school board should be the ultimate, or let's say, is their responsibility to determine the evaluation standards?
School boards, principals?
It can be a combination. It could even involve, I don't see why teachers wouldn't participate in the process too, at least to give some input.
Oh, absolutely, teachers should be in the process. But if you do things that I said, it's clear. All you got to do is come and watch.
Don't they do that? I always remember, at least in high school, they'd have, like, the assistant principal sit in the back of the room for, like, 20 minutes and make notes. I always thought that was rather intimidating.
Hold on a second. Give some more ideas. I got to go find my bed chart.
Okay.
Go ahead, I got it.
Yeah. Well, Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I know why the Chicago teacher strike got so much publicity and all the rest of it because of Rahm Emanuel and Chicago and all the rest of that. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was a local matter. It doesn't concern me, you know.
Well,
you do what you want. You do what you want with your school board. Our school board here is I mean, they're not all that great. They have nothing but conflict with the teachers union, and you know, well, they're bankrupt. what can you say about that?
Everybody bankrupt.
Yeah, yeah. But they cannot pass a bond issue. I mean, none of that is ever going to happen here. They're going to have to deal with what they have. I mean, because, in fact, we've been shutting schools down nearly every year now. You know, they've had to consolidate.
Well, the thing that's really angry, Rahm Emanuel, people, to go to the University of Chicago Laboratory School. Schools in Chicago don't even have libraries.
Hmm. That's sad.
Teachers have 50 kids in a room.
Yeah. Well,
you know, my kids had 50 kids in the rooms too, and managed to teach us how to read.
That's funny. You seem to be breaking up a lot now. When I was listening to you before, everything was fine. And now that I'm talking to you, it's real choppy.
Oh, sorry. I've been all worked up here and moving away from the microphone.
Okay, because I really can't keep a conversation going. It's, you know, not going to happen.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
The microphone, I'll calm down.
Okay.
Now,
when you said you bought a microphone, did you buy an omnidirectional?
It's a Logitech. Yes, it's omnidirectional.
Okay, well, that should work. I mean, it should solve the breaking up problem.
Talk in the opposite direction.
It's still not picking it up, huh?
I'm talking about here is something I do not understand, and you're the perfect person to talk to this about. Why does Apple stock keep going up?
Oh, well. Well, we have this thing called, well, QE3, but we've already had actually QE2.5. what we're anticipating is this. There's going to be a lot more liquidity because of QE3, of course. But the other is that there is so much money in the Treasury market. And you know that. It's just all this frightened money stored away. And it's going to be squeezed out. Now, the dollar has declined significantly over the last couple of weeks. Now, that is no good for treasuries. Absolutely. That's death for them. But for the American economy, it, of course, it makes our exports much more, you know, desirable. We're selling cheaper than we were. So, and remember that we have people who, you know, live on fixed incomes and they've been collecting next to nothing for years, and they got to move. That we're forcing that money into the economy. Whether they buy junk bonds or they buy stock or preferred stock or any stock that pays a dividend, you have this large group of people, mostly older, who live on dividends and royalties and things of that sort. So this scenario, you know, plus with the interest rates being as, you know, dirt, you know, next to zero.
The other thing, why shouldn't the United States keep borrowing money at zero interest rates, essentially?
They're gonna do, they have to. there isn't a why. It's they have to. A trillion dollars a year, maybe more.
Why don't we even more and pay the high interest debt off with the low interest debt money?
That's been ongoing.
Well, it should continue, and people should understand that things aren't as bad as some people would like us to think.
Yeah, except that, you know, even with the lower rates, this, you know, the debt is so enormous, the interest is still huge that we have to pay on that.
But they're borrowing money now at almost 0%.
Not through treasuries.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, I mean, if you're talking short term, that's one thing. But if you're talking 10-year, it's what, 1.5%, something like that, you know.
1.5%. I'd have given anything for a 1.5% mortgage on my house.
Well, you aren't going to get that. If you're lucky, you can get, you know, 3.5 or thereabouts. But even that, it's very difficult to get. The credit standards are so damn high. And
of course.
And the banks are very reluctant even to make those loans because they don't want 1.5% over 30 years. They don't need that.
Wait a minute. If everybody wants money and no lends, why don't interest rates go? And the money that is there.
Well, here's the thing. You know, they're, for one, you know, they have higher reserve requirements, and the other is that there's the uncertainty, especially in government, and it's all government at this point, is such that nobody wants to do a thing. They won't make a move.
If you're sitting on U.S. dollars, that's the biggest risk you could possibly take.
I've been betting dollars go down.
But why not turn your dollars into some real asset?
I have gold.
Gold's not an asset. Gold's a myth.
Gold is a commodity and a currency, both. Right now, it's the best currency in the world.
You need to go back to... Wait, what did Jennings Bryan say? Let me see if I can remember the line exactly. Thou shalt not crucify mankind. Press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. Thou shalt not crucify mankind upon this cross of gold.
I don't see us ever going back to a gold standard or anything of that sort. But you know, the more we borrow, the weaker our currency is. It's that simple. So you need to know that is in the works. It's been happening for over 100 years. Well, not quite. Just shy of 100 years.
Since the war.
No. War. At the cost of the war.
The war. The cost of the war has never been paid back.
Well, yeah. Well, the cost of a lot of things have never been paid back. You see, it makes no difference at all whether we've got Republicans or Democrats in charge. I mean, we've been running trillion-dollar deficits every year, and I don't know how far back we have to go. Probably to the Clinton era.
Reagan.
So, no.
Well, years.
Yeah, but we didn't. Yeah. I'm just giving. I don't. Norm, I don't make distinctions between Republicans and Democrats. Okay? It's all one party. You just have two factions.
You got a point there. I'm not going to argue that.
Okay, well, but you always want to return to the Reagan era. And come on, man, that's 30 years ago.
Ronald Reagan, the hero.
You're going to blame him for everything? He made plenty of mistakes. I know he did. I'm not a great fan of his.
I don't even know where to start.
Well, I don't know. Suppose I did nothing but talk about Jimmy Carter when I call you up. You wouldn't want to hear that.
Your grandson sure did.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that was hysterical. I mean, it was nice for a change to hear something honest come out of Romney's mouth.
Well, the point is that I think it's horrible that 47% of the country doesn't pay any income tax.
Yeah, well, there are a multitude of reasons for it. But here's the problem with Romney's logic. He says he doesn't need those people, that 47%, he'll never get their vote. Now, what are the most solid Republican states in the whole union? Mississippi, Alabama, the poorest places on earth. Well, in our country. And they're solid Republicans.
That's true.
So here's all those poor people who don't pay taxes, but they vote Republican right down the line. They've been doing it for a very long time. So yeah, that's kind of crazy. But yeah, you know, but he was being completely honest, and I didn't have any problem with it. But of course, it's damaged him quite a bit, you know.
Yes, it has.
So, yeah, I see Romney more or less imploding. You know, this is probably not the last. There'll be many more. And Obama's going to probably take this. I don't know what the percentage is, but, you know, I'm still voting for Gary Johnson, so I don't care, but, you know. But, you know, but I did pose some questions on a conservative site I was on over the weekend. And, you know, and you always want to attribute the unemployment rate to Obama. It's his fault. It's been 39 consecutive months with unemployment over 8%. I said, okay, so you want to blame Obama for unemployment. Okay, can we give him credit for a stock market that's doubled in 3 years?
Oh.
Does he get credit for that?
So?
Well, you know, it's like these things are not exactly under his firm control. Because if anything, Bernanke has had more impact on both of those issues, both unemployment and the market. You know, but I like to stir things up no matter where I go. So whether it's a liberal side or a conservative one, no difference to me at all.
We had we had the day off yesterday, so I watched that Frontline video.
Oh, okay. What one?
The Meltdown.
Oh, okay.
The Meltdown.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of them.
It is a miracle we still have a country. Barack Obama, they should start putting him on Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you could have seen, but that video is altogether, how bad it was. And how those guys all had water in their knees.
Mm-hmm.
Avenue and what's his name? Paulson. It was, I watched, can never remember the exact title.
Are you talking about the HBO thing?
Oh, it's actually Frontline.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because PBS actually made a movie out of it.
Yeah, well, HBO did it was a dramatization, of course, and very good and actually very accurate.
Well, yeah, this one was the actual, you know, when Bear Stearns went down and Lehman Brothers went down. And it really was, and essentially it was nationalize the banks or turn off the financial system.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you had to know when all those guys showed up in front of the House Banking Committee, that they were in deep trouble. That just doesn't happen, you know.
The whole thing was coming apart.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know. I don't know how far it would have gone, but I think even the Federal Reserve system, the banking system, would have had trouble. Yeah, exactly. In other words, they wouldn't even be able to allow you to cash a check. You couldn't do it.
You had any cash.
Yeah, yeah. But
it all went up in a puff of smoke.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, because, well, you remember a conversation we had maybe a month or two back about the Federal Reserve, well, the reserve requirements themselves. You know, that while it's in there, it's also being used. So it's not just sitting in the vault, you know. That is the money that they use for daily transactions. So it's all out there, you know. It's not like you can just pull it back in and say, we got the cash. Well, no, you don't.
Yeah, I don't understand why they have to lend so much money to each other.
Yeah, well, that's
play with somebody else's money. Play with your own.
Well, you know, there are imbalances at the end of the day, and that's more or less how it works. So,
well, fix that.
Well, we do fix that. It's called LIBOR, and I'm sure you're aware of what's going on there right now.
Yes.
There are going to be some heavy fines paid. So and they deserve every bit of that. I mean, you know.
Fix it, and it all just happens again.
Well, you know, they're more secure than they were, but they are on the path to go that way again. I think so. My confidence in the banking system, I mean, it's probably half of what it was. I mean, I'm suspicious of everything they do now. I did buy some bank stocks, you know, like in 2009, 2010, and I did make money on them, but I won't go back in. That's not, I don't trust any of it. You know, what can I say? You know, confidence is gone. That simple.
Okay, this is a startling figure. 47% of the people do not pay taxes.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
Truth to that?
It's probably true, but the reasons for it are, let's say I'm on Social Security and that's my only income. Of course, I don't pay any taxes. Let's say I'm on welfare. I have income, but I don't pay taxes. I'm on disability. I'm a disabled veteran. I mean, you add up all these groups, and they're exempt. They're completely, you know, are you going to blame those people for their circumstances? No, you shouldn't. But that's what they're doing. Now, I read today where because we expanded child credits and various things of that sort, well, that takes working people out, too. I mean, you're getting $1,000, $1,000 tax credit for each child. Now, if I got a, you know, four or five kids around the house, I'm not paying taxes either.
Well, soccer kids are all grown up.
Yeah, well, well, from what I read today, a family, mother, father, and two kids, family of four, making, I think, $40,000+, they pay no tax. That the credits and exemptions alone would be enough to wipe out any tax liability.
I don't know. So they get it all back. They pay payroll tax.
Well, yes, they pay that in, they get it all back, and the at the end of the year, you have paid zero tax, you know. Now, I looked at my taxes last year. I did exceptionally well. I paid nothing to the state. I paid $9 to the federal government. That was it.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, the mortgage and interest, that's one big one.
Well, that's true, and I don't have that anymore. My kids are all grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And we make more money than we ever did.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I didn't have to pull a lot of money out of, you know, like retirement and all that. I was using money that I already had, pretty much, you know. So my income was fairly low. You know, I forget what I hit. But anyway, that's all I owed them, and that was the end of that. So.
The first year in many years that we actually got money returned to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, this is the first time I've had a return in many, many years, you know. Depending on what I do financially, sometimes I have money withheld, you know, so I don't end up with, you can be penalized if you owe a lot of tax and you haven't paid anything in.
Some IRAs that I had to take money from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never let them withhold anything.
Oh, see, now I have them withhold, you know, like 10% on the federal and 5% on the state. And just, it's all covered that way. It's, you know, that way I don't have to mess with it. You know.
Any Maryland listeners out there, please let me know on Proposition 7. We do not need more gambling from the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I guess we'll be wiped out, but you all need to go out and vote. That big boy Little will be at the Zubar on Thursday night for the Blues Jam. Birthday. Baseball game ever is tomorrow, but I'm not going because the Dodgers and the Nationals are playing a doubleheader. Five tomorrow. I've always wanted to see the Dodgers play, but that big giant giveaway of the stadium just pisses me off.
Mm.
28 seconds left. You got anything you want to say?
No, nothing in particular.
Well, then Norm is going to be out of here in 10 seconds. It's been, I really feel good about the show. Again, I apologize for last week, but it was unavoidable.
Oh, okay.
And We'll see you all next week on the Norman Night Show. Thanks for calling from the coast. Talk to you next week.
Okay, take care, man. Good night.